Osho, Tao, The Pathless Path, Volume 1, talks on extracts from the Lita Zoo, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 2.
The first question. Where does educating the subconsciousness conflict or harmonize with Tao, as it implies discipline with self-effort from an external expression? Tao knows nothing of discipline. Tao is anarchic, spontaneous, effortless. All disciplines are unnatural. They have to be. Nature needs no discipline. It is sufficient unto itself. Trees and rivers and animals and stars, they don't know anything of discipline. Discipline is man-created, man-made. And because of discipline, man becomes split. One part starts manipulating the other part. Then a rift is created. The mind tries to manipulate the body. And the body tries to manipulate the mind in subtle ways. Art at least tries to sabotage. This conflict creates confusion. All conflict is confusion. Because of conflict, the fusion cannot happen. You cannot be one. You cannot be fused in one. Hence confusion. And the ultimate result can only be schizophrenia. You go on fighting and fighting, and by and by you are no more one individual. You become many, at least two. And if worse happens, then many. Then you become a crowd. And when you are not one, you cannot be happy. Happiness is a function of unity. Happiness is the music that happens when you are in a unison, when everything fits together, when everything harmonizes together, when there is no conflict, not even a trace of it, when you are an orchestra, not a crowd. Nobody is trying to manipulate. Nobody is trying to become the master. Nobody is trying to exploit, oppress. The whole being is overflowing with joy. Tao is spontaneity. It is not discipline. Hence, Tao is the ultimate in religion. No religion touches that peak. The moment a religion starts becoming a discipline, it has already fallen very low. There are three stages of a religion. Just like there is childhood, youth, and old age in the life of a man or a woman, so there are three stages in the life of a religion. When religion is born, the childhood of religion, when a master is alive, fresh, and from the source, the energy is flowing and the fragrance is coming. When Buddha is alive, or Lao Tzu is alive, or Jesus is alive, then religion has its first virgin, innocent state, the childhood. It is fresh as the dew drops in the morning, fresh as the rose flower, fresh as stars, innocent, knows no discipline. It knows only spontaneity. Close to a master, people start gathering. That is bound to happen. A magnet is there, people start gathering. Then the second stage comes, the stage of organic religion. The first state is individual religion, rebellious, spontaneous. There is no question of any effort, any discipline, any scripture. God is in the nude. Truth is as it is. No camouflage, no dressings. Then people start gathering. The second stage is not so rebellious. For these people, and because of these people, by and by, discipline arises. The master goes on talking of the spontaneity, but the followers cannot understand spontaneity. They translate it in terms of disciplining themselves. The master says, just be. They ask how to be. Their question of the how by and by brings discipline in. They create the discipline. Let me say it in this way. The master brings spontaneity. The disciples bring discipline. The word disciple and discipline come from the same root. When disciples have gathered around a master, they start translating what he is saying, what he means. They start interpreting. And of course, they interpret according to their minds. There is no other way. If you interpret at all, you will misinterpret. The real disciple is one who does not interpret, who does not translate, who listens passively, who is not asking a how, who is not in a hurry to get some result, who is not goal-oriented, who is not greedy. The greedy disciple immediately creates a discipline. This is the second stage. It's still alive. I call this stage the organic state of religion. The master is there, the disciples have come. There is an organic unity. But in the first stage, there was only the center. Now there is a circumference. And the circumference will go on becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. And the bigger it is, the lesser true it will be. Farther away, the circumference goes from the center. Farther away, it goes from truth. Innocence, it becomes knowledge, it becomes discipline, dogma. But still, a little light comes through all these screens. Then the third stage, when the master is gone, then religion becomes an organized religion. It is no more organic now because the center has disappeared. Now the circumference tries to exist without the center. It becomes a church. Creed, theology. Now religion is very old. And someday, somewhere, religion dies, but the church continues. You ask, where does educating the subconsciousness conflict or harmonize with Tao, as it implies discipline with self-effort from an external expression? Tao never allowed itself to become an organic religion even. Naturally, it never allowed itself to become a church. It has remained spontaneous. Hence, there are no followers. There is no church like Vatican or the Shankaracharya. Nothing like that. Tao has remained available for those who are courageous enough to be spontaneous. It needs great courage to be spontaneous, because to be spontaneous means to remain in a state of constant uncontrolled. Spontaneity means not to interfere with your nature. Let it be whatsoever it is, and let it go wherever it is moving. To be like wind, to be like a river, not knowing where it is going, not caring where it is going, not bothering, not trying to plan, not trying to project, to be natural needs great courage. Hence, there are very few people who have attained to Tao. There are millions of Christians, millions of Mohammedans, millions of Hindus, millions of Buddhists, but Tao has remained a transcendence, a fragrance, untethered, unimprisoned. Hence its beauty, its sublime exquisiteness, its superb truth. The superconscious, the conscious, the unconscious, the divisions exist because you have tried discipline. Otherwise, there is an undiscriminate consciousness inside you. There are no divisions. Freudians, Jungians, Adlerians, and other psychologists talk as if these divisions are naturally there, as if they are part of the facticity of humanity. They are not right. Unconscious exists because man has repressed. The moment repression disappears, unconscious also disappears. Unconscious is not a natural division of your consciousness. You have done something with your consciousness. You have forced many things inside your being which you don't want to look at. You avoid, hence the creation of the unconscious. A Buddha knows no unconscious. I don't know any unconscious. All that is in me, I am aware. I allow it. It is in my vision. There is no dark basement where I go on throwing things. The basement starts existing only when you start repressing. Repression creates divisions. Then you become more and more confined because you cannot look deeper. You are afraid. You cannot dare. You cannot afford. Unconscious is created. Once unconscious is created, then there is a small overlapping of the conscious and the unconscious. That is called subconscious. Unconscious means complete dark. Conscious means light. Of course, between this darkness and light, there is an overlapping, a small boundary which is neither dark nor light. That is subconscious. These three divisions exist because of you, not because of nature. But psychologists go on talking as if they have found some natural division. There is no division at all. The moment you allow spontaneity to explode, your consciousness starts spreading. One day, your whole being becomes light. There is no dark corners because there is nothing to hide. You stand nude into your own vision. Nothing to hide, nothing to escape from, nothing to be afraid. You have accepted yourself. In deep acceptance, you become one. Tao says, man has an undiscriminated consciousness. You cannot call it conscious, you cannot call it unconscious, you cannot call it subconscious, because these divisions are really fabricated, man-made. When a child is born, he has no unconscious, he has no conscious. He is indiscriminate. He is one. But immediately we start educating him. Immediately we start training him. Be like this and don't be like that. So whatsoever we deny, he has to reject. Those rejected parts go on piling up inside him. And if he has to look at them, it hurts. They are his own rejected parts. As if you have cut his limbs. It is painful to look at them. It is better to forget them. To forget seems to be the only way. And when you forget something that is inside you, unconscious is created. Unconscious disappears when you again become spontaneous like a child. The whole teaching of Tao is to be again like a child. It means to undo all that the society has done to you. It means to destroy, to dismantle the structure that society has put around you. To claim your freedom again, which is your birthright, to be radically transformed, to go beyond the structure of the society, to go above, to go to nature against nurture. That's what the message of Tao is. There is no discipline in Tao. Tao is not yoga. Tao is just the diametrically opposite standpoint than yoga. If Patanjali and Lao Tzu meet, they will not be able to understand each other. Impossible. Patanjali will talk about discipline. If Patanjali meets Confucius, they will become friends immediately. Confucius also talks about discipline, control, character. Lao Tzu talks about characterlessness. Remember the word characterlessness, because Lao Tzu says the real man has no character, cannot have a character. Character means something of the past. A real man lives in the moment. He does not live through the past. He has no ideas to live. He simply lives. He responds to the present moment. And he has no scriptures to follow, no moralities to follow. He has no commandments. His only attitude is that of spontaneous responsibility. Whatsoever is facing him, he responds totally. He responds fully. A man of character can never respond fully. He has ideas. He has to do things in a certain way. Before the situation arises, he has already decided how to act. He has rehearsed. The man of Tao lives without rehearsal. He never manages. He never jumps ahead. Let the moment come, and then he is there to reflect it. And whatsoever is needed will come out of his being. He trusts nature. His trust is absolute, utterly absolute. The man of character does not trust nature. He says, I should cultivate good character. Otherwise, in a certain situation, I may behave in a bad way. He does not trust himself. Look at the absurdity. He does not trust himself, and he is going to cultivate. And he is going to manage, and he does not trust himself. His self-distrust is there. So he becomes a pseudo person. Then he loses authenticity. He smiles because he has to smile. He loves because he has to love. He behaves in a certain way because that is how one should behave. But all false. Nothing comes from his heart. Nothing flows through his heart. Nothing has the touch of his being. Everything is just managed. Naturally, he lives a very pseudo life. His love is not alive. His smile is painted. His gestures are all impotent, meaningless. He manages, that's all, but he never lives. Tao has no discipline. It does not trust in character. It trusts in being, in your nature. And there is no effort, because all effort is going to create trouble. Effort means conflict. Effort means imposing something. Effort means you are at war with yourself. Tao trusts in effortlessness. Jesus says to his disciples, look at the lilies in the field. They toil not, they labor not. They don't plan for the tomorrow. Yet they are tremendously beautiful. Even Solomon was not so beautiful. When he was attired in all his beautiful dresses and diamonds and ornaments, even then he was not so beautiful like these lilies in the field. What is the secret of the lilies in the field? They live naturally. They bloom naturally. There is no effort. They toil not. Jesus must have got this message from some Taoist source. There are stories that he traveled to India. There are stories that he even traveled to Japan. There is a place in Japan which people said that he had come to this place. There are stories that he traveled to Tibet. If he had traveled to Japan and to Tibet, he must have come to know something about Tao. He must have gathered something. Maybe he never went to Japan and never went to Tibet. Maybe It was his own experience. He came upon in his own inner search. But he is a Taoist. Jesus can be counted upon. He is a Taoist. Hence Jews could not trust in him. They are fundamentally law-abiding people. 10 commandments of Moses. They have lived according to law. And Jesus says, Moses has given you law. I will give you another law and a higher law, the law of love. But love knows no law. He is tricky. Love is always lawlessness. But to convince the Jews, the law-abiding people, he is saying that I will give you the law of love. Law of love? It is contradiction in terms. Law is never loving. Love is never law-abiding. Cannot be. Love is freedom. Law is a bondage. They never go together. It is impossible to put them together. I have heard a man was passing through a cemetery and he came upon a grave and there was a beautiful marble stone on the grave and he looked and he read and it said, here lies a great liar and a great lover. He said, impossible, how 2 men can be in one grave? A lover and a great liar? Not possible. Jesus has brought love and has brought lawlessness. That's why Jews could not forgive him. He had to be punished. He was disrupting the whole society. He was dangerous. He was really dangerous. Very few people have been born on the earth who have been so dangerous. He was sabotaging the whole structure. And he said, God is love. And the God of the Jews was never love. He was a very angry God and a very jealous God. And he will destroy you for small things if you don't abide by his commandment. He threw Adam and Eve out of Eden because they disobeyed. Love forgives. Love knows how to forgive. Love loves so much that it is impossible to be so angry and in a rage. The God of the Jews were destroying cities for small things because people were characterless or they were homosexuals. And he will destroy Gomorrah and Sodom. And he will destroy the whole town. He flooded the whole world. He wanted to destroy the whole world. He cannot be very loving. He may be just, but he is not loving. And how justice can be love? Justice has to be justice. Love is a totally different dimension. The Jews became afraid. Jesus is bringing spontaneity. He is bringing lawlessness. And he is bringing rebelliousness. And in such disguise that people will not be even aware what he is bringing in. If people are against me in India, it is natural. My whole message is a sabotage. Jesus says, I don't bring peace, I bring a sword. And Jesus says, I have come to put the son against the father, and the husband against the wife, and the mother against the son, and the brother against the brother. What he means? Because these relationships, these so-called relationships, are no more of love. They are only formal. Jesus says only love is enough. Anything else is going to destroy your naturalness. Love your mother, not because she is your mother. Love her. Let there be love. But not because she is your mother. How can you love a woman just because she is your mother? How can you love a woman just because she is your sister? You can fulfill duties, but duties are ugly. Duty is a dirty four-letter word. Avoid it. It has destroyed nature. It has destroyed humanity. It has not allowed men to flower and bloom. No, there is no discipline and there is no effort in Tao. There is only understanding. Remember, let me repeat it. There is only understanding. Effort means you have not understood rightly. That's why you have to make effort. If I say, love is enough, and you understand me, will you make any effort? That very understanding will bring a change. Understanding is revolution. If you understand love is enough, if you understand the lilies in the field are beautiful, if you understand what beauty is, to be natural is to be beautiful, are you going to make any effort to attain this beauty? Because through effort, how you can be natural? To be natural, you have to drop all effort. And will you try to drop your effort, throw some effort? Then you will be getting into the same trap again. It is not going to change you. Just see the facts. Just see the fact and let the fact be there. Let it penetrate your heart. Let it sink in. And you will see the very understanding of the fact has transformed you. Suddenly you see that you are a totally different man. The old man is gone and the new is born. There is no effort. And one thing more about it. Tao is sublime laziness. It does not believe in aggression. It does not believe in the male element. Tao is feminine, passivity, receptivity. Try to understand this. There are two ways to approach truth. One way is that of aggression, almost like rape. That's why I always say science has raped. It is aggressive. It has been coercive on nature. It has forced nature to reveal its secrets. It is very crude, primitive. Because one has to rape only when you cannot love. A rapist is one who is incapable of love. If you can love a woman, can you even think of raping a woman? It will not even come into your dreams. It is impossible. When one fails in loving, then the rape arises. Violence arises only when love fails. Aggression arises only when love fails. Science is a failure. Failure in the sense that we could not pursue in nature. It would have been better to persuade. Tao persuades nature. There is no need to coerce love, and by nature reveals its secrets to you. Science tries to force. You come to know some facts, but they are ugly. They are abortive. They are not naturally born. And something of your violence goes on echoing and re-echoing. So it is not just coincidence that science has led to more and more violence in the world. Science is violent. It is not just coincidence that science has culminated into atom and hydrogen bombs. There is a natural corollary to it. Science is coercion, and coercion ultimately ends into violence. And if we don't become aware, science is going to become suicide, a universal suicide. One day or other, man is going to commit suicide. Because if you force nature violently, there is going to be repercussions of it. And the violence that you do with nature will come back to you. Things happen in such a subtle way that sometimes one is not aware. Adolf Hitler destroyed Jews in Russia, in Germany. He expelled Albert Einstein because he was a Jew. He would have never thought that this one man's expulsion from Germany will be the end of his whole effort, will be the end of fascism. Albert Einstein was turned out of Germany. He sought asylum in America, and he wrote a letter to Roosevelt proposing that atom bombs can be created. It was Albert Einstein who became instrumental in creating the first atom bomb. And that very atom bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, and it destroyed the fascists and the Nazis and Adolf Hitler and all his dreams of 1,000 years rule on the world. Now, if you look back, the thing seems to be very simple. He turned Albert Einstein, and he could not have even imagined that this turning away of Albert Einstein will be his end. If Albert Einstein was not turned out of Germany, Hitler may have ruled the whole world. But a Jew turned out of the country was not significant at all in his eyes. But that Jew proved his undoing. In a roundabout way, the atom bomb was created. Life is very deeply interconnected. Whatsoever happens here will have repercussions there. Tao says never coerce nature, otherwise nature will throw all coercion back on you and you will be destroyed. Persuade, love. And as Tao says don't coerce outer nature, Tao says don't coerce inner nature too. Science tries to coerce outer nature, yoga tries to coerce inner nature. So science and yoga can go together very well. They are fellow travelers. Einstein can understand Patanjali very easily, and Patanjali can understand Einstein very easily. But neither Einstein nor Patanjali will be able to conceive what Lao Tzu is saying. He will look mad. He will look absurd. He brings a totally different dimension into the world, the dimension of the feminine. Man is aggressive, woman is receptive. Woman is a womb, a receptivity. Lao Tzu says truth has to be received, not seeked. Seek and you will never find, says Lao Tzu. Wait. Wait in openness. Wait in vulnerability. And you will find, because truth will come to you. Invite and wait. Love and wait. Be in a let go. That is the meaning when I say sublime laziness. It is inactivity, yet it is not lethargy. Inactivity, yet full of radiance. Not doing anything, but pulsating with energy. In fact, a person who is not doing anything should pulsate with tremendous energy, because he is not putting his energy anywhere. So energy is accumulating. He becomes a reservoir. Radiant, alive, throbbing, streaming. In that great energy movement, yet it is inactive. Truth happens. The active person loses energy. The active person is destroying, dissipating his energy. The inactive person accumulates. So it is not lethargy. A person who is lethargic is inactive and has no energy. He is impotent. Hence I call it sublime laziness. The highest peak of laziness. But remember, inactivity plus energy plus vitality. And not a single effort has to be made, because in the effort that much energy will be wasted and you will be less radiant. And God comes to you only when you are so vital, optimally vital, optimum at the peak. You cannot be any more vital. In that peak you meet the divine. Your highest energy comes closest to God's feet. God's lowest energy is closest to man's highest energy. And there is the communion. To understand Tao is simply to understand. Your repressions are like diseases, and all your efforts bring nothing but repressions. I have heard a mysterious man was constantly found waiting on the doorstep of the Metropolitan Museum in the morning when it opened. He was well dressed but always unshaven, looking as if he had just got out of bed, flung on his clothes and made a dash for the museum. But once inside, all he did was sit on a bench, unfold the Times and read for an hour or so. One morning he noticed a guard looking at him and said testily, "I suppose you are wondering why I come here. I am trying to stop smoking." and I have to be some place where they won't let me smoke, see? He brooded for a while, then amplified his explanation. On Sunday mornings, when you people are closed, I have to go to the church. If you are avoiding something, repressing something, escaping from some fact, your life will become a very ugly phenomenon. You will never be able to live your life because you will be never able to be at ease with yourself. Drop all unease and remember, easy is right. No effort is needed. I know why effort appeals so much, because effort is very ego fulfilling. When you make effort, you feel you are doing something. There is one more question, very much related to this question. The questioner says that when I had come in the beginning here, I was a great spiritual seeker and I was making great effort. Now I have become sort of a materialist. Because now I am making no effort to reach spirituality, to attain nirvana and enlightenment. So what has happened to me, Bhagwan? Have I fallen from grace? You have risen in grace. And what you are thinking is materialism is true spiritualism. And what you were thinking was spiritualism was just greed and materialism. You were trying to become enlightened, that was materialism. Because that was greed. To have any goals is to be a materialist. Not to have any goal is to be an spiritualist. To try to attain something is to be greedy, to be desirous, to be ambitious. That is all ego trip. To drop all those trips and live here now and love the small things of life, one becomes spiritual. That's the difference between the so-called ordinary spirituality and the spirituality that is of Tao. If you go and you find Laozi, Chuangtazu or Lihitazu, you will not be able to recognize them. They will be very ordinary. You will have to be with them to feel. They don't impose any extraordinariness. They will not show you miracles and they will not show you siddhis and powers. They will be very ordinary people. To be ordinary is the message of Tao. To be so ordinary that you don't have any idea to be anything else. So be too contented, so contented. Eating, drinking, loving, talking, listening, walking, sleeping, sitting in the sun, under the moon, looking at the trees. These small things become sublime when you look with a contented eye. When you are happy, everything becomes tremendously beautiful. Everything becomes luminous. It depends on you. Let me tell you that when you had come to me, you were a materialist. You were thinking that you are a spiritualist. Now that you are falling into spirituality by and by, you must be becoming a little afraid where your spirituality has gone. That was materialism. Go in India and you will find out of 100 so-called Mahatmas, 99 materialists. Materialists in the sense that they are ambitious. Materialists in the sense that they are hankering for something in the afterlife, for heaven, paradise, moksha, nirvana. their desire is very much alive. In fact, they are more desirous than ordinary people. An ordinary person desires a big car, not much. Can be forgiven. Maybe stupid, but not a sin. A little foolish, so what? But somebody is desiring heaven. That is too much greed. Eternal life, that is too much greed. The car is a toy. A big house is a toy. But this so-called spiritualist wants eternity, to be forever and ever. A deathless quality he wants. His ambition is so big. His ego is so big. He cannot be satisfied with his small things. He wants God in his fist. Only then he can feel that yes, he is somebody. Try to understand me. Here I am trying to put things upside down, because things have been upside down too long. They have to be put right, and that is the only way. If somebody is standing on his head for many days, how to put him right? Put him upside down. Then he will be right side up. The so-called spirituality is nothing but garbed materialism. You have to look into things. A man who has no desire is spiritual. A man who does not hanker for any ego trip is spiritual. A man who is not worried about kundalini and chakras and sahasrar, 1,000 petal the lotus opening, that man is spiritual. That man has the quality of being a spiritual man. In his ordinariness, he is extraordinary. In his mundane life, he has a holiness. Even the division between the spiritual and material is materialist division. A spiritual person knows no divisions. A spiritual person simply accepts whatsoever is. And this isness is one. There is nothing like spiritual and the material. That again is the division of the ego. All divisions are of the ego. When the ego disappears, there is no division. There is one reality undivided. Call it spiritual, call it material, does not matter. When there is only one, any name will do. In the name of spirituality, people have been crippled, destroyed, paralyzed. Once upon a time, the Duke of Lu went forward to meet a seabird that had made its appearance in the confines of that country and escorted it to his ancestral hall. This is a Taoist parable. There an ox, a sheep, a pig were slaughtered, and a feast was spread before the seabird. While the band was playing the celebrated music composed under the supervision of the Emperor Suen, the bird, however, merely looked on, sad and doleful, refusing to relish the morsel of meat or drink a single cup. Thus it died of hunger after 3 days. The Duke fed the bird as he would feed himself, and he failed to see that it should be treated as a bird, not as a king. The music is meaningless to the bird. and the ox and the sheep and the pig are not his food. He killed the birds. Man has been killed because you have been allured towards things for which you are not made. You have not been given a chance to be yourself. You have been manipulated to be somebody else. All ideologies and force upon you something that you have to become. Tao says, you are already that. There is no need to become. You are already that. You are a being. There is no becoming. You are that already. Start living it. See the revolutionary message. There is no need to improve upon yourself. You are already that which you can be. Just start delighting in it. Celebrate. Live. And the more you celebrate, the more you live in a natural way, the more you will start feeling your innermost core. And in the innermost core of your being is Tao. It is your nature, the way. The second question, is it good to take risks? Good or bad is not the question. If you are alive, you have to take risks. Life is a risk. Only death is secure. Life is never secure. There is no security. The companies that are called life insurance really should be called death insurance. In life, there can be no insurance. Life is alive only because there is risk, danger. That's why there is so much thrill. You ask, is it good to take risks? If you want to be alive, you have to take risks. The more risks you take, the more alive you will be. So you are really asking, is it good to be alive? Your question, rightly interpreted, will mean, is it good to be alive? Now, I am not a murderer. And I don't want to poison your life. Many people have done that. The priests, the politicians, they are poisoning your life. They are all teaching you to live within bounds. Live in such a way that there is no risk. That you are always safe and secure. But then you are dead. Then you are already in your grave. And then you become miserable. And then you start seeing that you don't have any love, that you don't have any happiness, that nothing is happening in your life which is worth. Then you start feeling there is no meaning, no significance. And the reason is that you are avoiding risks. Meaning comes through being dangerous, adventurous. Value arises only when you are alive. Value comes through vitality. Virtue simply means to have the quality of courage. Courage is the only virtue. If you don't live a life of danger, then better commit suicide. Then why burden this earth? And then why feel miserable? What is the point of it all then? Then your misery leads nowhere. Then your misery is just a rut in which you go on moving. Look at people. Their eyes has lost the luster of life. Their faces are more like masks than real faces. They don't live, they only pretend that they are living. They act, they don't live. And then, naturally, they come to feel that there is no meaning, no flowering, no fragrance, no dance, no song arises. Then they go to the priest to ask. And the priest says, yes, the song is possible, but it happens only when you are dead, after death. Then they go to the politician, he says, yes, life can have meaning, but the social structure has to be changed, the economic structure has to be changed, the whole history has to be changed. Communism has to be brought, socialism has to be brought. When people lose meaning, of course they start asking where to find meaning. And these are the two places where they go, the priest and the politician. And they are the persons who have put you in such a state where meaning has lost. Now this is a very great conspiracy. First they destroy the possibility of meaning. And then of course you are in their hands. You have to go and ask. And they show you the ways. Look at a child. He has meaning. Sometimes have you watched it? A child playing with the pebbles on the seesaw or running after a butterfly. Just watch. But don't make him self-conscious. The moment he becomes self-conscious, he is no more a child. Just watch, hiding somewhere, absorbed. The child is completely lost. And how beautiful he is. The grace on his face. The color. The joy. The glee. The gladness. The vitality. As if he has wings. And he is so much absorbed. In that absorbed moment, he is closest to God. He is in Tao. He is on the way. He is enjoying this moment. He is tremendously happy. So happy that he is not even aware of happiness, because only miserable people become aware of happiness. He is so happy. Who bothers? He is so totally in that he is not an outsider. Then you do one thing, bring a camera and try to take a photograph of the child. And the moment he becomes aware that the photograph is being taken, all gladness has disappeared. His face is no more true. The mask has come. His eyes are no more absorbed. That shining quality is no more there. They have become dull. He is no more dynamic. He has become static, rigid. Now he has become self-conscious. The ego has entered. With the camera, the ego has entered. Now the child is ugly. That's why it is very difficult to have a beautiful picture. The person may be beautiful, but when you take him to the photo studio, suddenly something goes wrong. The picture never comes so good. Have you ever been satisfied with any of your pictures? Whenever you look at the picture, something is missing. What is missing? You became self-conscious. You became aware. You started performing. You wanted to look very good, happy, smiling, a great personality, magnetic, charismatic, and all is gone down the drain. You are just an ugly person, dead. You are conscious of the camera and you are conscious of the people who will look at your picture. You are so self-conscious. How you can be beautiful? A person who is continuously thinking whether there is any risk or not becomes so self-conscious that he never lives. He becomes rigid and dull and stupid, mediocre. Forget all about risks. Life is a risk. The day you were born, one thing has become certain, that you are going to die. Now what more risk there can be? My mother's mother, she was a very old woman, and she was always afraid about me. I was continuously traveling in the train. 15 days a month I was in the train. And she was always afraid, and she will say that there are so many accidents, and every day she will look for the newspaper just to say whether there has been some train accident, some aeroplane has fallen or something, and she will collect all the cuttings. And whenever I will go, she will show me, look, so many car accidents, so many aeroplanes burnt, and so many trains, and so many people killed. And what you are doing, 15 days on the trains, planes, cars, stop this. So I said one day to her, listen, if you are really interested in aesthetics, then you don't, do you know, 97% people die in their bed. So should I stand outside the bed the whole night? It is risky. There is no other thing more risky than to be in the bed. 97% people have to die in the bed. You are safer in an aeroplane. Rarely somebody dies in an aeroplane. Rarely in a train. She was very much puzzled. She said, it is true. But that cannot be done, she said. It is impossible. Yes, that is true. Since then, she stopped talking about the accident. She understood. The day you were born, you have taken the greatest risk that you can ever take. Now death is going to happen. Death is bound to happen. You have already taken one step in the grave the day you were born. Now what more risks you can take? Even if you go on avoiding risks, you will die. So why not take the risks and live really authentically? A rich man once said to a friend, why is it everybody is always criticizing me for being miserly? When everyone knows I have made provisions to leave everything I possess to charity when I die. Well, said the friend, let me tell you about the pig and the cow. The pig was lamenting to the cow one day about how unpopular he was. People are always talking about your gentleness and your kind eyes, said the pig. Sure, you give milk and cream, but I give even more. I give bacon and ham, and I give bristles, and they even pickle my feet. Still, nobody likes me. Why is it? The cow thought a minute and then said, well, maybe it is because I give while I am still living. Death is going to take everything. Why be worried then? Rather than saving it for death, to take it away, share it. Take risks. The miserly man is the stupid man. everything will be taken away. Don't be so cautious. Don't be so cautious. Have the spirit of adventure. Yes, I know sometimes you may commit a mistake, but nothing wrong is in it. Sometimes you may go astray, but nothing is wrong in it. Those who can go astray, they can come back. But those who never go anywhere, they are dead. Never commit the same mistake again and again, that's true. Invent new mistakes every day. Be creative. Risk in new ways. And that is what sannyas is all about. To be risky. To live dangerously. To live without security and safety. To be tremendously in love with life is what sannyas is. And don't postpone it, because all postponement is again being very cautious. Do it right now. If you have understood the thing, let it happen. A pious brother sat on the front pew during the Sunday morning sermon. Presently, he began to remove one of his shoes. This unusual procedure in the midst of a church service caused those who could see him to smile and lose interest for the time in the sermon. But the brother then proceeded to remove his sock. This caused so much distraction that the preacher stopped in his discourse and asked the brother if there was something unusual the matter. "No," said the disturber, "I just noticed that one of my socks was wrong side out." "Well, my brother," chided the minister, "could you not wait until the service is over to make the change?" "No, sir," was the reply. "When I find I am wrong, I always proceed at once to get right." That should be the procedure. Whenever you feel that something is wrong, get it right immediately. Don't postpone. If you have never taken any risk, take it now. And you will be richer for that. The third question, it is from Anurag. You say, be thankful to someone when he accepts the love you bring, but the seeds of my love fall mostly on stony ground. Then be thankful to the stony ground. Fourth question. Yesterday you said that the understanding of death is the basis of Eastern psychology and the understanding of sex is the basis of Western psychology. Will you please say something more about it? Death is the greatest thing that is going to happen in life. Death is the climax. Death has to be understood, because death is the goal of life. All life is moving towards death. Not to understand death will really mean not to understand life. But we have been taught to avoid the fact of death. We don't talk about it. We don't think about it. The very idea gives shivers. A trembling arises in the being. and we want to be occupied somewhere else. When somebody dies, you feel a little embarrassed. It looks that this is not the thing to be done. Why he should die? Anybody's death brings you again and again to the awkward situation. And the awkward question arises in your being that one day I am also going to die, and that you want to avoid. The East has not avoided anything. That's the beauty of the Eastern psychology. Whatsoever is, and it has to be looked into. Death is, so death has to be looked into. It has to be faced. And a person who avoids death, you will watch, he will be avoiding life also. Because to avoid death, there is only one way to avoid life. Otherwise, life is leading you towards death. Whatsoever you do, you are going towards death. Don't do anything. The only way to avoid death is to avoid life. There is a way you can manage. You can fall in a coma. Then you can live longer. Because then there will be no accidents. The doctor can give you intravenous injections, feed you through injections, and you can lie down in the bed, protected. And you can live very long. You can live 1,000 years, but that will not be life, that will be vegetating. You will be a vegetable. But you can live long. There are few people are lying in underground air-conditioned chambers in America who have died. But they have made a will that their money should be used to protect their body. Because there is a rumor in scientific circles that within 20 years it will be possible to revive a person. So they have made a trust of their whole properties. It is very costly, almost $10,000 per day. But their bodies are being taken care of. So nothing goes wrong. So when after 20 years science becomes capable to revive, they will be revived. Now these 20 years, and even after 20 years you are revived, what you are going to do? You will repeat the same foolishness you have been doing before. You will again start chasing women and competing in the market and arranging money to die again and to be protected again. What is the point of it all? Man is so afraid of death. East says death has to be looked into eyes. Death has to be looked into deeply. If you can encounter death, in that very encounter, you transcend death. You come to know that there is some element in you which is beyond death. Avoiding death, you remain under the control of death. Facing death, you transcend death. We never think about our own death. Whenever we think, it is somebody else's death. Death means somebody else's death, ABC, never yours. Finkelstein was arguing with his salesman. I should buy your eggs, he shouted. My hotel should burn down and I would not buy them. My wife should die and I would not buy them. My children should choke and I would not buy them. The egg peddler caught the spirit of the argument and said, you should go blind and buy a case. Listen, Cousin Finkelstein, leave me out of it. Whenever you are talking about death, danger, you are always leaving yourself out of it. That is no way to encounter. That is no way to face the reality and truth of life. If death is, death is. What is the point of avoiding? Look it. Sooner you look, the better. The East says by looking deep into death, you transcend death. You suddenly become aware that one who can look into death is beyond death. Deep meditation brings you to the moment of death voluntarily and consciously. Meditation is a death. One dies and is reborn again. One dies from the world of phenomena and one is born into the world of noumena. One dies into the temporal and one is born into the eternal. When you come back from your deep ecstasy and meditation, your whole life is transformed. Then you live without fear because there is no death. But from the very childhood, we are making people afraid. From the very childhood, everybody is protecting himself, even children. We contaminate their mind. One Sunday at the zoo, Bill and his father stopped before the lion's cage. Here is the king of the beasts, said his father. Why do you call him that, daddy? Well, he is the big sort. He can lick any other animal. He is a real man-eater too. You mean he would even eat you? Asked the boy. I guess he would if he got out. Bill studied the lion with interest. Finally he turned and looked up at his father. Daddy, he whispered, if he does get out, what bus should I take home? Nobody is thinking, not even a child is thinking that he will not leave him. He will be left out of it. He will take daddy and he will have to go home. So what number bus? There is something in human mind that keeps away from death. And there is a reason in it. There is a cause. Because mind is going to die. You are not going to die. But don't misunderstand me. When I say you are not going to die, I am talking something inside you which you are not aware of. Your mind is going to die. That's all you have known about yourself. Even that you have not known totally. Only a fragment of the mind you know. Your mind is going to die. Your mind is not eternal. It is a time phenomenon. It is born and it dies. Your body is going to die. It is a constructed thing. It is the meeting of your father and mother. It is accidental. But you existed before your father and mother ever had met. And you will exist when your body has gone into the earth, disappeared, dust unto dust, you will exist. But that you have not known yet. The East says that element can be known only when you encounter death, when you face death, when you accept the challenge of death. Then you will see deep inside, body is gone, mind is gone, ego is gone. And if you remain courageous and go on facing the fact, you will come to a moment when suddenly you will see all is gone and yet you are. And this is your reality. This is the answer of the question, who I am. The last question. Becoming a sannyasin is attractive. But now I am deeply involved with Erika. I love Oscar very much. The contradiction would be loving and serving two masters. How to resolve it? As far as I am concerned, there is no problem. You should ask Oscar. I am not jealous. You can love me and you can love 1,001 masters. There is no problem. In fact, my whole effort here is to make you fall in love with Lao Tzu, Chuang Tzu, Li Tzu, Buddha, Krishna, Christ, Gurdjieff, Krishnamurti, Raman, Ramakrishna, 1,001. I am not jealous. I am vast. I can contain all your loves. So, as far as I am concerned, there is no need to be worried. But before deciding anything, you should ask Oscar. Because I have the feeling that he is jealous. Enough for today. Thank you.